We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
And good morning. I'm Roger Cooper, sitting in for David Inge on Focus 580. And during this portion of Focus 580, we'll be talking about one of the fastest growing health issues today, and that is adult onset diabetes or diabetes 2. With me in the studio is Martha Trinkamp. She's a nutritionist and a diabetes educator from Carl. Welcome, Martha.
Thank you, Roger. I'm glad to be here.
We're very happy to have you. Well, I will start with an announcement that, I guess an admission, that my interest in this subject was sparked by the fact that I was recently diagnosed as a diabetic. And so, of course, I wanted to know as much as I could about it. And unfortunately, Carl has a very excellent education program. And so I attended an 8-hour workshop on diabetes, its causes, preventions, and its cures. And we're going to try to roll those 8 hours into 50 minutes. You think you're up to it, Martha?
Oh, I think I'm up to it. How about you, Roger?
Well, my job is simply to listen, ask questions, and answer the phone. So I've got the easy part.
Okay.
But to get us started then, well, first of all, I need to tell our listeners that they can give us a call at 333-9455. If you have a question or a comment, or if you're out of our dialing area, then it's 800-222-9455. And to begin our discussion now, perhaps we should start with what is diabetes and what isn't diabetes.
Well, we'll talk about what is diabetes. I do want to make a comment. You said that, you know, it's one of the fastest growing diseases, and you're certainly not alone with your diagnosis. Mm-hmm. I mean, over 24 million Americans have diabetes. Now, that's both type 1 and type 2, which we can talk about. But over 12,000 individuals have diabetes here in Champaign County alone.
Mm.
So you ask, what is diabetes? Diabetes actually is a disease that's marked by high levels of blood glucose. And it really results from a defect in insulin production or insulin use or utilization or a combination of both. And that's typically type 2. It's that combination of both. And then, of course, unchecked, or if it's not taken care of, you're going to end up with potentially some severe complications. And that's why education and early intervention is critical.
Mm-hmm. Now, we're talking specifically about type 2 or adult onset mm-hmm. diabetes. But before we do that, could you just say a word or two about type 1, what it is, I mean, what the difference is?
Sure. I'll be glad to. And actually, see, again, these are things that we talked about in class. Mm-hmm. There's a pretty pronounced difference. I mean, type 1 diabetes is diagnosed primarily in individuals who are under 20. Now, that's not 100% of the cases, but under 20. It is a insulin deficiency. You know, there's some type of autoimmune issue that's occurred that they have completely stopped producing insulin, and they are dependent upon insulin to live.
Mm-hmm.
Type 2 diabetes is a very different animal. It is usually occurs in individuals over the age of 40. The symptoms are very slow. Type 1 diabetes, the symptoms can come on very quickly because you have this, you know, this stoppage of insulin production. But with type 2, you may not even know you have diabetes, and you can go years without symptoms and running these higher blood sugars. And then, of course, there can be the damage that continues to occur, mm-hmm. which we all want to try to prevent.
Mm-hmm. You keep saying insulin. Maybe we should start even back further than we did.
Okay.
What is insulin? What does it do?
Okay. Insulin's it's a hormone,
mm-hmm.
and it's produced by the pancreas, and it is it's the regulator of your blood glucose. And let's address type 2.
Mm-hmm.
In type 2 diabetes, what ends up occurring, you end up having less insulin produced early on. You start producing less insulin. You're still producing it, but not quite like you did a few years ago mm-hmm. or whenever. That insulin then, that deficiency in insulin, starts those blood sugars rising because insulin's role is to take the glucose that's released from food, capture it, take it over to the cell, put it into the cell, and let it run the body. Glucose is your main fuel. You know, it's like gasoline for a car. We got to get it into your tank. And that's what insulin's role is. And so if you don't have enough insulin on board, it's hard to control those sugars. The other issue, too, with type 2, if we can address this now, is you are also – you're producing insulin, or an individual – I won't talk about you, Roger – but an individual with type 2 diabetes, they're producing insulin, maybe not at the rate they used to, but their body doesn't use it very well. They develop something called insulin resistance. So you have – you have a decrease in insulin production, and then your body just doesn't – they're not – it's not as receptive. The cells aren't as receptive to your own insulin. So the key is let's get you more sensitive to your own insulin and then look at the other therapies that we can mm-hmm. do to help with that.
Mm-hmm. So then my conception of diabetes has always been that you get it from – well, what I've always been told, even from when I was a kid from my mother, is that – eat too much sugar, you're going to get diabetes.
Exactly.
And then I got a little older and somebody said, no, if you eat too much fat, you're going to get diabetes. Which is it?
Well, I think they're both myths. I mean, mm-hmm. certainly, but they can also both contribute. Mm-hmm. Not one thing causes diabetes. Mm-hmm. It's a very complex disease. And it is not unusual for individuals to think that too much sugar causes diabetes. But what we have to realize, sugar is just a form of a carbohydrate. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it's going to convert into glucose or the fuel for your body. So a lot of high sugar foods are going to be converting to a lot of glucose. But does it actually cause you to have diabetes? No. I mean, we can have individuals who produce insulin just like they always have. They eat a lot of Fannie Mae candies, and they still don't have high blood sugars. But again, type 2 diabetes, there's a defect, you know, and that, again, the insulin production, the insulin usage. So no, it's not just, it's not too much sugar. Now the fat issue, too much fat doesn't even really convert into a lot of glucose, so it's not like it's raising the blood sugars a lot. But fat has a lot of calories, Roger, and part of that insulin resistance business we mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. it's tied in with percentages of body fat. And so a high-fat diet can be a high-calorie diet, which then puts you more at risk for diabetes, because we can back up a little bit to what we were talking about, type 2 diabetes. I mentioned about over the age of 40. An individual is also more at risk if they are running above their average BMI. You know, if they're in the obesity range, they end up being at higher risk. So a high-fat diet contributes to that obesity. And there you can, you know, is it the chicken or the egg? But eating too much fat is definitely not going to cause you to have diabetes.
How often should one be tested?
Typically, you know, your physician's going to be testing once a year, and that's pretty much the standard that we look at. That's for just a blood glucose test. And this is for an individual who doesn't have diabetes. It's typically on their annual physical exam. They'll be tested once a year.
Is there a gender component? Are men more likely to have diabetes? Are women more likely? Or
I think there's a little bit of an edge to males. It's not that significant. A little bit more edge to males. Ethnicity mm-hmm. is certainly, we see higher percentages. African Americans, Hispanics, Native American Indians, we see a higher percentage of type 2 diabetes.
Mm-hmm. And did we talk about A1C, what that is?
We didn't. Mm-hmm. We didn't talk about an A1C. We talked about the blood glucose, mm-hmm. you know, because that's, you know, that higher blood glucose, that's almost toxic. That glucose, the body loves it in a normal range, but when it's too high, it's an issue. So then what do we look at as far as good blood glucose control? They use a measurement of this A1C to see how your diabetes is being managed. And an A1C test gives you a percentage number, which then equates to what, how much glucose is you're averaging per day in your system. So it gets a little confusing. You're testing your blood sugars each day, which is one of the treatments. I mean, we look at good diabetes management, and we're encouraging individuals to do self-blood glucose monitoring. And you're getting readings. You're testing in the morning, and you're getting readings around 120, 110, 90, and 70 to 130 is our goal. And you're testing once a day. And so then you think, well, when I go for this A1C test, which will give me an average of what my blood sugars are going to be, I'm sure it's going to come back in a normal range. Mm-hmm. A1C normal range, less than 7% is what we're shooting for. And it comes back 7.2, and you say, that can't be. Martha, I've, you know, look at my blood sugars. You have to remember the A1C test actually is a measurement of red blood cells, how coated they get with glucose. And then they can measure that coating of glucose that occurs and come up with what that would equal as far as blood glucose values.
I said that I was recently diagnosed, so this blood testing and all this is new to me. So I have a feeling that when I go for that first A1C, I'm going to have a little surprise.
Maybe yes, maybe no, Roger. You know, I know we talked about this through the classes and things, and how hard and what kind of effort individuals are making. But the thing to remember is it's just a test and you go forward. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to be a number for you and it's going to take you forward. Maybe I could address, if you like this A1C we're talking about. I said under 7% is what we're going to be looking for. When you look at, let's say, an A1C of 6%, that means that your estimated average glucose is about 126 milligrams per deciliter. Boy, that's great. You know, that's what we love those A1Cs. But if an individual comes in and they're diagnosed or their A1C is, let's say, 9%, that means their blood glucose values are averaging 212 milligrams per deciliter. So that percentage, again, it's a measurement of how coated that red cell blood cell gets with glucose that's in the system. So obviously, a person who's 9%, he has a lot more circulating glucose than an individual who runs a 6% A1C.
Okay, now that we've established that, let's talk about the treatment. Now, mostly the treatment for diabetes is nutrition, diet management, is it not?
It's a critical piece. It's a critical piece.
And can you talk a little bit about that,
sure.
How that works? I mean, I know you mentioned it has to do with carbohydrates rather than sugar particularly.
Excellent. Yeah, that's true. Well, you know I love to talk about nutrition. That's definitely. When we look at control of diabetes, there is certainly medical nutrition therapy. There's a nutrition component, and it would be for all types of diabetes, including type 1. But with type 2, we look at nutrition management, but you also have to look at exercise. Remember, glucose is your fuel. Let's get it into the tank. Let's get it into the system to help you. And moving more can do that. Mm-hmm. So there's an exercise component. And then if need be, there'll be a medication component. And those are the three things that we look at to kind of help control and keep these blood sugars within as near normal range as possible. But as far as nutrition management, what we look at, some basic things. We do and talk to people about the impact of carbohydrates on blood glucose values. And carbohydrates can be very healthy foods. We know that. I mean, your whole grains are carbohydrate, and so is that apple that you go out and purchase from Curtis Orchards this fall. But it also can be a Twinkie or a Ding Dong or something else. But all carbohydrates, 100% of carbohydrates that are in food convert to glucose. So it stands to reason we need to control, or work on limiting the amount that we're eating at any one time. That's one component of nutrition management is to get the carbohydrates controlled somewhat, not give them up. You know, we're not advocating an absolute 20-gram, 0-gram of carbohydrate diet by any means. And then we look at then the other nutrients, protein and fat, and what is their role as far as diabetes management. I mentioned earlier about fat not converting into a lot of glucose, but there is such a strong cardiovascular component to diabetes, Roger, that, we always look at trying to get that good, healthy diet that's lower in fats modified in fats and getting those good healthy fats coming in, not because they directly impact on the blood glucose, but we're trying to really prevent or at least slow down the progression of cardiovascular disease.
Mm-hmm. If you have a question that you want to ask Martha Trencamp about diabetes, its treatment, its symptoms, or anything, give us a call at 333-9455. If you live outside the 217 dialing area, then call 800-222-9455. Let's talk now a little bit more. Well, we were talking about nutrition, and one of the things I was shocked to learn during the sessions that we had was that fresh fruit,
right.
Which I always thought was one of the healthiest things you could eat in your whole life, and it's on the watch list.
That's a good observation. You're a good listener, Roger. Boy, you really picked up a lot in that class.
When it comes to food, I don't miss much.
Your ears were really peaked for that one. Let's look at it again. Carbohydrates are not bad to eat. They're not bad foods. There are certainly healthier carbohydrates. We don't want an individual not to have fresh fruits in the diet because they have too many other health components for you. But the key is, how much are you going to eat at one time? You know, one apple, the size of a tennis ball, is about 15 grams of carbohydrate. When you're looking at that, that's going to raise your blood sugars maybe 40 points. That's not the issue. It's the total amount of carbohydrates. So I really don't, you know, we really advise people not to give up those healthy carbohydrates, but let's look at the amount and let's spread them throughout the day. That's what's critical, mm-hmm. is taking them and moving them throughout the day. Because if you eat a large amount of carbohydrate at one time, you're going to get a large release of glucose. Carbohydrate, again, they're going to break down within 1 or 2 hours. The carbohydrate in your foods will break down in 1 to 2 hours into glucose, into a certain amount. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, three servings or 45 grams of carbohydrate breaks down into maybe 100 grams of milligrams of glucose. And if you're eating Olive Garden or a pasta dinner and it's 105 grams of carbohydrate, look what happens to your blood sugars. So the take-home message is not we don't want you to give up the good, healthy carbohydrates. I mean, we really don't, but we do want you to look at the amount. You mentioned fresh fruit. I mean, grapes, people think I can't eat grapes. You can, but again, if you really love them and you sit down with a bowl of them and eat a large amount of grapes, sure, you're going to get an excursion or, you know, an elevation in your blood sugars. But you take that same handful and maybe eat it 2 or 3 times a day, sugars will be, you know, they'll really stabilize. You'll do fine with that.
Uh-huh. And do I remember something about combinations of food, that eating food in combinations, and that helps to regulate, I guess, the blood sugar, yeah. the glucose?
I think when we look at healthy eating in general, we want a good variety of foods, mm-hmm. You know, because of just for general health. So that's one of the things that we certainly look towards. But as far as maybe certain things and how they impact on blood glucose, we like a food that has a fair amount of fiber in it. You know, the recommendation is that that you want to try to get more fiber in your diet. Fiber is a non-digestible carbohydrate. Mm-hmm. And so the fiber that's in food, half of that is not converting to glucose. So if you're getting a food that would have more fiber in it, that's going to be released as less glucose mm-hmm. into the bloodstream. So the fiber is a critical piece. We also know, that higher fat diets kind of slow down the digestive process. And so what happens is if you have a large amount of fat, you may not see your blood sugars pop up very quickly because it's slowing down how quickly things are moving through the digestive tract. But you might get a high blood sugar later. So that's what else we caution people. If you're eating a very high fat dinner, you might check your blood sugars before you go to bed and it comes in at 128 and you think, I escaped that. But you wake up the next morning and it's higher than normal. Again, it wasn't because the fat was converting it to a lot of glucose, but it slowed down the digestion of the carbohydrates. And so you got a later hit of your blood glucose. So I think those are some things that we look at when we're looking at overall blood sugar management.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing that I found out about this that I that I liked was that instead of 3 meals, I get 6.
Yeah. Why is that? Again, you know, you look at – you do better with kind of spacing the foods out. Mm-hmm. If we give you a certain amount of carbohydrate, and part of diabetes management, we do look at carbohydrates, and not everybody's on a carb counting or so many grams of carbohydrate diet. I mean, not one method fits for every uh-huh. individual. But if we give you, let's say, 225 grams of carbohydrate as part of a meal plan, and if you take that 225 and you divide it out throughout the day, you're going to have less of an excursion, less of a pop in your blood sugar after those 6 small feedings than you would if you saved it up and you decided to eat 150 grams out to dinner at a pasta place. Then you're going to get a much higher rise in your blood sugar. So it's better. It keeps things a little bit more stable. Plus, it helps the appetite, Roger. Mm-hmm. Meal skipping is so detrimental to healthy eating. When we really look at an individual, one of the things that when I bring, we do one-on-one medical nutrition therapy or nutrition education with our patients also. And when we're discussing kind of habits, healthy habits towards, you know, moving towards better blood glucose control. You look at structure. Meal skipping is just leads you into overeating. It leads you into potential, actually, which we'll, I know we'll get into a little bit later, but like fluctuations in your blood sugars that may not be, you know, really that good for you. But it also, I think it's the main thing of overeating. People that skip meals, they may not be hungry in the morning because they've overconsumed so many calories the night before. They're kind of still running on the night before. And that's, you know, that's not a good, healthy way of eating. We really look at people, they do so much better with more structure. At least three meals, and if not, those more, you know, spreading out and having a few more snacks. I think that really makes a difference.
Okay, we've talked a little bit now about what diabetes is, a little bit about prevention, a little bit about treatment. Let's look at, I don't know, do you talk about a dark side of a disease? I don't know if that's the right word to use, but untreated or poorly managed diabetes, what kind of troubles can you get into?
Well, you know, all this education actually is working towards helping you manage your diabetes and prevent complications. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know there is definitely a serious side. We just wouldn't bring you in for 8 hours of education and say, oh, well, that's because we just want to see you, Roger.
Absolutely.
But you do look. I mean, there's certainly there are long-term complications and short-term complications. But if we look at diabetes, you can look at nerve damage. You look at, vision damage. You can look at kidney damage. You know, there's retinopathy, there's neuropathy, there's nephropathy. There's these really major things that can occur. I mean, diabetes is actually the leading cause of adult blindness in the United States. It's also the leading cause of kidney failure in adults. Mm-hmm. And so those are obviously major diseases. And then the cardiovascular complications. I mentioned that earlier in relationship to nutrition management with fats. An individual with diabetes is 2 to 4 times more likely to have heart disease mm-hmm. than someone who doesn't. You know, that's double. And so, yes, there's major complications that can occur. And so we know good blood sugar management can help with that. There was a diabetes study that was done, gosh, I'm dating. I mean, it might even have been 15, 20 years ago, that long ago, but the data is still so good, where it showed that for every 1% drop in your A1C value, you decrease the likelihood of the complications of these, like the eye damage or the kidney damage by almost 40%. I mean, it was significant. And so that's what we strive for. And that's what a lot of this treatment is based on, is really preventing the complications. Or if an individual does have them, to slow the progression. There's a lot of things that can be done to really kind of minimize things today. But yes, there's a dark side to diabetes, and I think that's it. And obviously the positive side is what we know today and all the treatments and things that are out there for people.
You said there was a 1% drop. You said there was a drop if you improve your A1C score, but I think there's also a big improvement in your diabetes if you lose weight. I mean, and just a very small amount of weight makes a big difference. Is
it
that not true?
It is, Roger, yes. In diabetes...
I say that having lost 20 pounds.
Ooh-wee. Way to go, Roger. And so we can give a testimony today. Sure, we know that, remember I mentioned earlier about type 2 diabetes and something called insulin resistance? One of the things with insulin resistance is percentage of body fat that we carry. When you lose some of that body fat, when you decrease the percentage of body fat, it's almost like knocking a wall down and letting insulin kind of get towards that cell and that cell blossom open more and the glucose goes in there. Mm-hmm. We see a really nice response, especially early on in a diagnosis, with a decrease in percentage of body fat. And what we strive for, 7% decrease, 10% decrease can make a huge difference. And so that's not a substantial amount of weight for an individual. We haven't touched on prediabetes, kind of trying to prediabetes run kind of is a precursor to moving into type 2 diabetes. Mm-hmm. And with that, it's not full-blown diabetes, but it's these slight elevations in blood sugars. And we know, again, that's not healthy. But there are studies that were done and actually cut short with prediabetes, a diabetes prevention trial, that showed that individuals who decreased their weight by 5 to 7% and increased activity by 30 minutes 5 times a week close to 60% of those individuals did not develop type 2 diabetes.
So
lifestyle is significant in preventing diabetes and controlling diabetes. Mm-hmm. We know that.
Mm-hmm. I'm Roger Cooper. This is Focus 580 here on AM 580. I'm sitting in for David Inge. My guest is Martha Trinkamp. She's a nutritionist and a diabetes educator from Carle. And we're talking about adult onset diabetes and lifestyle changes. If you have questions or comments, give us a call at 333-9455. Or if you're outside of our dialing area, then call 800-222-9455. That number again, 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Let's talk a little bit now, I guess, about the medications that are used to treat diabetes. I guess the first thing that comes up is insulin. And I know the minute I heard that there's a possibility that I might be diabetic, then my mind immediately went to insulin and panic and fear.
Right. I think that's a lot of people's response. But, you know, we have to look at, truthfully, type 2 diabetes is an ever-changing disease. And as we age, we produce less insulin. And with, you know, with what all goes on with type 2 diabetes, there's a real strong likelihood you live long enough, you may eventually need insulin therapy. Now, people don't necessarily like to hear that, but we know that insulin is the key with controlling blood glucose. And when yours is working for you, your own insulin is working through the years, that's wonderful. But at some point, maybe it won't. And then people do need insulin therapy. Insulin's not the first line of treatment for type 2 diabetes. Certainly type 1, it's critical. There isn't an oral pill for type 1 diabetes. But with type 2 diabetes, insulin's not the first line of treatment normally. There are certainly, we look at lifestyle changes at some point. At the beginning of the diagnosis, depending, again, on what the blood glucose comes in, there is insulin therapy. There's also a tremendous amount of oral medications that are on the market today, and each of them do some different things. Now, you know, I'm a registered dietitian and a certified diabetes educator. You know, I don't prescribe meds by any means. I do work with individuals with adjusting their pre-meal insulin based on their carbohydrate content of the meal. But as far as dosing different medications, I wouldn't do that. But we know that, again, there's different medications for diabetes that you take, and they work on different things regarding treatment of diabetes. Because diabetes isn't just a little touch of sugar. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a multifaceted disease. You know, I mentioned with type 2 diabetes about this insulin resistance problem. I mentioned about kind of a decrease in the amount of insulin that you produce and things. I guess the other thing that we look at is regarding medications and things is that glucose gets into the bloodstream a couple of ways. It gets there, of course, by what we eat. You asked me about nutrition management and the carbohydrates, and let's kind of see how much of those we're eating. But you know what? The liver also is involved in your glucose. And that's something else that people need to keep in mind, and there are medications that work on that. The glucose stores up. The liver stores up glucose for us, Roger, and you get a little wake-up call of it, a dumping of glucose, let's say, to wake you up early morning, every morning. You don't feel it, but it happens. With type 2 diabetes, you have kind of an alteration in how the liver puts that glucose into the bloodstream. It's like you have a pooped-out pancreas and a runaway liver. Mm-hmm. And that liver in type 2 diabetes doesn't want to shut off. It dumps too much. That's why people get higher levels of glucose in the morning because of the liver, not what they ate necessarily. So there's a lot of things that go on. And there's medications then that address that. They address the liver and how it releases glucose into the bloodstream. There's oral medications that address even the insulin resistance problem that make you a little bit more sensitive. So there's all kinds of things. There's all different therapies out there. And working with your primary care physician, your endocrinologist, your diabetes nurse educator, the certified diabetes educator, nurse educator, really can kind of fine-tune your nutrition management, your diabetes management.
Mm-hmm. Is there a homeopathic root, I guess, or element in the curing of diabetes?
Yeah.
I mean, you said you're a nutritionist, so that brings me foods themselves help? Well, I know they can help, but I guess nothing cures diabetes.
No, no. You know, we always talk about, you know, it can be controlled, but there's not a cure.
Mm-hmm.
But the American Diabetes Association and many, many other organizations, you know, National Institute of Health, many people are out there looking for a cure or just really different treatment modalities for diabetes. Okay, let's, you know, you look at homeopathic or herbals or, I mean, you know, there's a lot of people. We're always looking for something different. And believe me, I want good diabetes management for my patients. And if it's out there, you know, I certainly would be recommending it. There's talk about cinnamon. And at one point, there were some things about cinnamon being very helpful in glycemic control. But then the studies didn't pan that out. But if I have an individual who puts cinnamon every day on their oatmeal, do I say, don't do that? Or if I have an individual who comes into my office and says, Martha, I take cinnamon pills, I think they help. Well, it can't harm them. So that in itself, we don't have any problems with.
Okay, great. We have two calls from Urbana, Martha.
Okay.
So let's take our first call. What do you have to ask of Martha Trinkamp?
Hello.
Hello, Liz. Yes.
Yes, I'm wondering about some of the medications. Are there side effects, say, to Actos and Metformin?
Well, I mentioned earlier, I'm not an expert in meds, but when you do, you know, you maybe have done some reading on your own with them. With Actos, are there side effects? There's side effects with all meds, and I think you just need to go back and talk with your primary care physician regarding maybe some of the concerns that you have. And it's the same with metformin or glucophage. Sure, there's side effects, but I'm going to really kind of just take a standard here and just saying I'd go back and talk with your pharmacist or talk with your primary care, because if you have concerns, I think it needs to be addressed, and you'd feel more comfortable then, perhaps with the treatment.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes, thank you for calling. And I think we have a caller in another line. Caller in line four.
Hello, thank you. I've just recently read in the current issue of Newsweek magazine that they're discovering that this epidemic of obesity that's contributing to all the a great number of health problems, especially diabetes, and that they discovered that the fat that people develop as a result of the obesity is predisposing them to these diabetic things, especially along with the consequent heart and circulatory and other problems, is a result of the interceptors of in the cells that are programmed to either allow the fat to be used normally or to be absorbed, and the people get fat. So there's a whole new you might say roadmap on why obesity is occurring and the consequent problems like diabetes and other conditions. I thought I'd just let you know that's in the current September 21st issue of Newsweek magazine regarding obesity and the consequent problems. So there's a new, just when you think we've learned everything, there's a new thing on the horizon. So I just thought I'd let you know. Thank you very much.
Thank you for calling, and I'll definitely look into that magazine article. You're right. I mean, that's what we have to look at with all of these things. There's just so many new things that are coming, and the research that's being done, you know, what we can look through history and see what's gone on with medications and treatment of diseases. You know, but to address the obesity issue, I mean, certainly I didn't bring any statistics about obesity, but we just have to look at the population in general and see that our weights are going up from a multitude of reasons. I mean, it's caloric intake, it's activity, it's many things, and many people have a lot of different ideas about what those things are too. But obesity is certainly one risk for developing type 2 diabetes. Age is another risk. But, you know, it's kind of like environmental issues come in, the weight, maybe the decrease in activity. But you also have many times a genetic component. But the genetic component alone doesn't put the person into, you know, doesn't necessarily make them a marker 100% for developing diabetes. You get these other things that come in. But I appreciate that, the heads up about the Newsweek article, because I haven't seen that yet.
And thank you for that call. Chicago, we have a caller on line one from Aurora. What would you like to ask Martha Trinkamp?
Yes, hi. I appreciate the show, and I tuned in a little bit late, but I think you already started to answer my question from the previous caller. My dad is a diabetic. He found out when he was 50 years old, and his dad was a diabetic. And I'm okay so far, and I'm in my late 50s. And I'm wondering, what can I do, or what can you do to kind of prevent diabetes?
Oh, that's a great question. And actually, you know, there's a tremendous study that showed that 60% of people who make lifestyle changes did not prevent diabetes in this trial. The biggest thing is to look at your weight and to try to keep it within a healthy range, you know, to try to keep that healthy BMI, and also then to be active. You know, again, when we eat, that glucose is meant to be used up primarily. And so you want to stay as active as you can. The study was done with 150 minutes a week of activity, 30 minutes five times a day. And then also I think they used the 10,000 step program as one of the means of increasing activity. So if you're headed in that direction, I think that's the biggest critical piece for you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you for your call. And we have a caller on line four, Urbana.
Hi. I was just wondering, my doctor, I'm a type 2 diabetic, and he prescribed me this medicine that's Januvia, and he said this won't cause any weight gain, and he said something about hypoglycemia, and he thought it was a very safe drug, but I'm just wondering what you thought about this drug, if you had any knowledge about it and how it works. He said it's a new way of working, and I was just curious if you could give me some information about it.
Yeah. Well, Januvia is certainly one of those new classes of drugs that is out there, and it does not cause weight gain. Many of the medications for diabetes do cause weight gain, and so, you know, you think, well, wait a minute, I'm trying to lose weight to control my blood sugars. I'm not really, again, I hate to be kind of hedging with this with meds, but I really think, you know, you go back to your pharmacist, you go back to your primary care physician, and just ask them some of the things that you have some concerns with. It's not a real, I don't prescribe meds, and I don't adjust the medications, and I just don't think that would be actually fair to you to talk too much about it at this point.
Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
And thank you for your call. Getting back to nutrition, Martha, let's talk a little bit about labels, reading labels to find out carbohydrate levels, fat levels, and yeah, that sort of thing.
Sure. Those labels, they're nutrition facts is what they are. They're there to help us. I think they give us sometimes more maybe than what we need. I think individuals look at the labels and they kind of – the percentages of the nutrients that are in the foods are highlighted, you know, on the right-hand side. And we zero in on those. But actually what we're looking at, I think the important thing is, number one, find out what the portion size is, because that's the critical key. Because once you start coming down and you look at calories, the calories are based on the portion size that's listed. So you might end up looking at a label, and it might say it's a serving size is one cup, and you end up looking at it's 150 calories, but when you look at the number of servings then in the can, there's maybe two servings, which would be two cups, and so you're not getting 150 calories, you're getting 300. And then if you're looking at the carbohydrates for that serving size, maybe it says 25 grams of carbohydrate. And again, if you eat the whole serving, let's say it's a can of soup, then you're getting 50 grams of carbohydrate. So I think the critical key is with labels, you look at the portion size. Then you look at calories, you start coming down, and you're going to see fat on the label, total fat. The guideline is to keep it 30% or less of your calories coming from total fat. And you think, well, again, how is that helpful to me or is that not helpful? But a lot of times you'll see then underneath the total fat is the saturated fat. And that's really what I key people in on, especially individuals who have LDL problems, cholesterol problems, a high percentage of the bad cholesterol. We really try to limit saturated fat in the diet. And so when you're looking at the fat on the label, let's look at how much saturated fat would be in a food. And then, you know, it comes down into then some other things. There's sodium on a label. And then what's the sodium there for? Perhaps you have hypertension and you've been told to limit your sodium to 2,000 milligrams a day. The general health recommendation is for 2,300 milligrams a day. But if you're limiting it and you see a product that's 1,600 milligrams of sodium, that's obviously not going to be a good product for you to use. And again, that might be just for one portion. And if you're eating the whole bag or the whole box or the whole can, you're getting a lot more than that. And then it comes into those carbohydrates that we're looking at. And we do talk about grams of carbohydrates. You know, we know carbs come from, I mentioned fruits, but they come from the starches. They come from your sweets. They come from milk. They come from yogurts. So all of those products are going to show up with some grams of carbohydrate in them. So I have people look at grams of carbohydrate, and then we look at fiber, because I think fiber is one of those things we are always forgetting about. And the goal is 25 grams of fiber a day, and that is not easy to get. But when we're looking at research with a lot of other health considerations, cardiovascular disease, cancer, and of course diabetes, it's always kind of one of the things that we go back to is looking at the fiber in foods and trying to get a higher fiber diet.
Martha, our caller from Chicago has a follow-up question, and he's on line four.
The next item on the label is sugar, and many people don't know that when it says so many grams of sugar, every 3 grams is equivalent to a teaspoon of sugar. So when a can of soda has 20 or 30 grams of sugar, as they say, that's virtually equivalent to, you figure out the math, 10 grams of sugar per can of soda. Is it any wonder that people are becoming disposed to excess consumption of soft drinks, and now they want to tax the drinks to some way or other get people to reconsider the drinking of this toxic beverage now that it's becoming affecting our health. And so the grams that are on the label are very important to read. So every 3 grams is a teaspoon of sugar. Thank you.
Well, that's again a good point to bring up. You know, you start looking with diabetes, the sugar is part of the carbohydrate picture. And it is just with everyone looking at the label. So it's part of the carbohydrate picture. It's figured up into the grams of carbohydrate. But when you're starting to look at these, like you say, soft drinks, and there might be 45 grams of carbohydrate in that product, and actually 42 of it is coming from sugar. Again, you can do the math. Typically, we're looking at about 4 grams per teaspoon, but you know, 3 to 4, when you're looking at that amount, is insignificant. 9 to 10 teaspoons of sugar in a can of soft drink. But there's also 150 calories, and that's 12 ounces of a soft drink. That's not, you're from up in Chicago, so I'm sure it's the same up there as it is down here. You know, these 64-ounce big gulps that you can purchase for 99 cents, you know, I mean, that in itself is like drinking liquid candy, and it's such an excessive amount of calories at any one time. And given the fact that we're such a nation that's very sedentary, you know, there definitely is a correlation. I don't believe, however, that there's just one food item that has really caused the obesity problem in the United States. I mean, I think it's a multitude of things, but it's certainly there. And, you know, we look at supersizing. They don't use that term very much anymore because actually the fast food companies have moved away from using supersize because it's such a negative connotation. But there are still large amounts of beverages. You know, a small beverage at a restaurant is 16 ounces. It's not, you know, it's not an 8-ounce or a 10-ounce product. You know, remember the little small Coke bottles that we used to have? Well, those are antiques today, aren't they? You know, everything's large, and so the larger it is, the more calories we're getting.
Okay, thank you, Chicago. We have a call on line one.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, I have a question concerning, or perhaps I need you to go back over something you said before, and that was, would you say something again about the boost of insulin or glucose in the morning when you first wake up?
Oh, sure. With and without diabetes,
yeah,
the liver gives us a little bit of glucose as a wake-up call. You know, like I said, glucose is the fuel for your body. So everyone's going to get this little a kind of release of glucose to get us going. And it occurs maybe around 4 o'clock in the morning or so. What happens with type 2 diabetes is that the liver dumps too much glucose in. I mean, to put it very basically, it dumps too much glucose in during that period of time. And then, of course, you're not as efficient at producing insulin. So you have this little natural rise in blood sugars, and insulin's not catching up to it. So you can have a higher fasting blood sugar. And that is very typical with type 2 diabetes.
Okay. And then I have a follow-up question. Mm-hmm. I've had diabetes for about 12 years. My A1C has never been higher than 5.7. You can see I'm working at my diet,
woo-hoo,
et cetera. But in the last probably 2 years, I have noticed that my morning fasting glucose readings are up at about 120, whereas they used to be up at around 80.
Mm-hmm.
I always have been told to take a small snack about an hour before I go to bed. Where do you stand on the small snack? And if so, what would you propose? Would it be protein or what?
Okay, there's a couple of things. The snacks with diabetes were always tied in with prevention of hypoglycemia, which is low blood sugar.
Right.
And so in the past, the insulins that were used, individuals always had to have a nighttime snack.
Yeah, and I'm on oral meds.
Yes, ma'am. So, you know, typically, unless you run some low blood sugars during the night, it really is not critical for you to have a bedtime snack. Now, there's some schools of thought out there, well, you have to eat a bedtime snack or else, you know, there's a starvation mode that occurs and you'll even get, you know, the liver will dump more into the bloodstream.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, there really hasn't been anything that pans that out. In most of the cases, we're trying to work on weight management. And so consuming calories at bedtime is just one more episode of perhaps over-consuming of calories. So where do I stand on it? Depending on what medication you're on, depending on what your blood sugars are running, you may need a bedtime snack.
Yeah, but I'm on Januvia and Acto.
Right, right. It's up to you and to see what your blood sugars are doing. But if you don't think you need a bedtime snack, if you're not hungry, I wouldn't eat it.
Okay, it's not going to make a difference. Thank
no, ma'am.
You. But
mm-hmm.
if I am hungry
oh, yeah.
and decide to go on with it, would you suggest, for example, a hard-boiled egg or a handful of dry cereal? I mean, which food source?
Sure.
Would
it be carbohydrate? Would it be protein? Would
right.
it be fat? I understand. Again, it depends on what you're using it for. For you, maybe a small handful of nuts.
Okay.
I mean, because you're not using it. If people who need the glucose to kind of come in during the night to prevent low blood sugars,
yeah,
then they would need to have carbohydrates. That's
okay.
what they would need, because we're going to want glucose moving into the system. But, you know, if you're not having any low blood sugars or on a medication, I would just use a small handful of nuts. I think that would be healthy for you and a nice treat.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you very much for calling. We're just about out of time, but we do have a first-time caller on line 2 from Savoy.
Hello, I just wanted to mention that if people are going to do that 6 times a day to eat thing, they might have to tend to their teeth more than once or twice a day, because they're just going to produce more material there for the bacteria to work on, and that's it. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
That's a good observation. I think that sounds like very, very good advice.
Let me ask you one quick question, because we're just about out of time. What do you do
mm-hmm.
when you eat out? I mean, what do you...
That's a whole program, Roger. You know, I think you do. You come forearmed. I mean, there's lots of books to help you. There's websites that can help you. And you you have some knowledge base before you go. Usually I tell people, you know, try to steer away from fried foods. Really look at more basic foods. The plainer, the better. You know, and stay away from foods that have adjectives in front of them. Grande, you know, deluxe, super. Mm. Those foods are going to be higher in calories, higher in fat, larger portions. And remember, they're serving you on platters, Roger, when you eat out.
Right,
you know, what does that tell us? What does that tell us? So,
I see these new plates advertised on the telemarketing thing with the little designs that show you exactly how much protein you should put on the flour and how many starches you should put on the leaves. And
like
so
that.
It's all proportioned out for you already.
You know,
maybe restaurants should start doing that.
Maybe they should, or maybe you could buy one of those and take it with you and use it, you know, to plate up your own food in a restaurant.
To wrap up, what does the future look like as far as a cure for diabetes, new treatments? What's the outlook?
Well, there's plenty of things in the pipeline. I mean, we know that medications. We always want to say, you know, hopefully there's a cure. I certainly wish I could tell you that there is on the horizon. But there's many things coming, and you know, things perhaps to make things easier for us. You know, people are testing blood glucose values and you know, sticking their fingers each day. And, you know, maybe there'll be at some point there's going to be like a closed loop where you won't have to be testing blood sugars. You'll insert a little catheter or something, and then you'll end up getting a blood sugar results from that. So there's a lot of things out there. One of the things I did want to bring up, though, too, Roger, very quickly is we need support. You know, you get education. People end up getting education, but then we want them to have continued support from individuals. And there's two support groups here in town. Carl Clinic has a support group, and it's held on the third Tuesday of each month from 7 to 8:30. And then Christie Clinic also has a support group. However, it's the same night. It's on the third Tuesday of the month, and it's held out at their Windsor Clinic. But those are important things. I mean, they can provide a lot of support for individuals and families. And I think there's a lot out there to help people. The more they know, I think the better off they're going to do.
Mm-hmm. And I guess in closing, if you wanted to say maybe two or three sentences as far as the prevention and the treatment and management of diabetes, what would they be?
What would they be? And, you know, prevention of diabetes, eat well, keep moving. You know, stay aware of your body. I mean, many times, you know, we kind of just kind of go along and are not paying attention to different signs and things that we have. Eat your fruits and vegetables like your mother told you. You know, don't skip meals and stay away from sugar sweetened beverages. I think those are kind of key things to just start looking at for some basics. But there's a good future out there, and there's a good future for people who have diabetes who do take care of themselves and do self-blood glucose monitoring and management.
And also be a label reader.
Excellent.
I'd like to thank you, Martha Trinkamp, from Carl, a dietitian, nutritionist, and diabetes educator. We've been talking about adult-onset diabetes, and as Martha mentioned, there are two support groups in town, and remember, you can also learn, I learned a ton of information on the web, so be sure and look up that as well. We'll have more focus coming up this morning. Right now, we're going to have a pause for a look at news, weather, and markets. Thank you, Martha.
You're welcome, Roger.